something happening here. But what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Being wrong, nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying sign. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. You better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. You better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of Time for a Plan. We are on episode 5, I believe. Yes, we are on episode 5 now. And with us, as always, on this show is Gary Hunt. Gary, how are you doing tonight?
Just fine, and I hope you all enjoyed something from the 60s that was Buffalo Springfield, and that's when demonstrations in the street got bloody because the people that had the signs got pissed off enough to attack the police from time to time. Unlike the tea parties today. And it's that kind of commitment that will get our country back. Anyway, the show tonight, we've got to do the normal routine. A few months ago, somebody asked me, wasn't quite a question, but they said, you can't have a revolution today and achieve it in this country. They've got the guns, the electronic equipment and everything, and so the question arose, could we have a revolution in this country today? So I thought about it. And at first it was kind of daunting to think that we could. And I thought about it. And I took a piece of paper and I started listing some things. And, actually it seems quite simple when you break it down into the little pieces, the little elements that are necessary to achieve the results you desire. So what that became was a theoretical plan that we could fight a revolution in this country today. It'd be just like George and Tom and some of those Ben and some of those guys sitting back then saying, well, could we take on the British? Here's what we'd have to do. And so that's what this is all about. Now, I've just posted a link up there, the end of the revolution, beginning of independence. And you'll see from that that the demonstrations back then were more like the 60s and less like the tea parties today. The this is from Henry St. George Tucker. I'm going to read something from a book called Resistance to Tyranny by Joseph P. Martino.
Hey, Gary, can you hear more? Gary, I'm sorry. Can you speak up a little bit louder? They're we're having problems, I guess. Some of the people aren't able to hear you, people that normally can hear you. Actually, here, let me try this. Try that.
How is that now? Getting an echo. Is that better? Somebody on the chat, let us know.
Yeah, it looks like it is.
Okay.
I've got your volume up really loud, so we'll see what we can do there.
Okay, well, the theoretical plan is what we'll be talking about. Now I'm going to read a quote from Henry St. George Tucker. The right of self-defense is the first law of nature. In most governments, it has been the study of rulers to confine this right within the narrowest limits possible. Wherever standing armies are kept, and when the right of the people to keep and bear arms is, under any color or pretext whatsoever, prohibited, liberty, if not already annihilated, is on the brink of destruction. And that's quoted in Blackstone's 1768 Commentaries on the Law of England. Now, the means or the methods that are used to achieve that were written by Henry May when he was talking about the tightening of screws in Germany. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for the one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join you in resisting somehow. In between come all the hundreds of little steps, some of them imperceptible, each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next. And one day, too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible of them, all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy. See, what's happening in this country today? A little bit at a time. They take a chink here, a chink there, and pretty soon there's not very much left. So we'll go right into the plan. This is theoretical. Let me make that absolutely clear. If anybody wants to emulate this in real life, feel free to. I have no possessive rights about it at all, but I want you to know that I'm speaking in a theoretical sense. The first element in conducting a revolution today, then I need a little more foundation on this. When we consider that the world has changed considerably in the last 230 plus years, we've got to adapt to the playing field we're on. Back then, you could own a cannon. You could own any implement of war, a ship with cannon, any implement of war the British had. They didn't like it, and they tried to take them away, and as was just pointed out, when they try and take those away, there's a reason for that. But now we're restricted. We can't even have full automatic rifles unless we're licensed by the federal government to have that full automatic rifle. That way, they know where that fully automatic rifle is. We are not allowed to have grenades. We're not allowed to have mines. We're not allowed to have hardly anything. In fact, I'm surprised they allow us to have body armor. But we're playing on a different playing field, and now to respond to that playing field, to work on that playing field, we have to understand that our tactics would have to be adapted to the playing field. Some other elements then and now. Back then, the colonists could take a group of people and go kidnap somebody, tar and feather him, frequently resulting in his death. He's been kidnapped. Sometimes they were put on a little wagon and toted around town with signs hanging from them saying what their crime was, a tax collector for the crown, for example, or a customs collector. Any number of reasons could get somebody killed. There were never any consequences as a result of that because there was no police force. There was no standing army in place to make this happen. Now, Patrick Henry warned us about a British soldier in every house in his famous speech, but that didn't exist then. There was no police force that could muster, no standing army that could muster and come forth and arrest these people. And if they did, the jury trials would find them not guilty. In fact, the degree of violence was so great that many customs houses, warehouses, and houses were torn down. Now, understand that back then, nails were very expensive, so very few nails were used in construction of the house. Most often it was different mortise joints and different methods of construction, unlike what we use today with a lot of nails. But they would physically, and I haven't found details of it, but physically go in and tear down a house, tear it to the ground, a two-story house, coming down to the ground because they'd go in and dismantle it by hand. So the destruction of buildings and the painful death of some people that were working on behalf of the British government occurred. But the playing field allowed them to occur. The right of the people to defend their position, to take aggressive action or offensive action against that government was there. And they could do it, and usually without consequence. The Boston Tea Party, as we know, they destroyed thousands of dollars worth of, tens of thousands of dollars worth of tea. I think 342 chests of tea, threw them in the harbor, and nobody was ever charged with a crime there. But today, if we were on the ship, the local police department would come out there, stand on the dock, and unless we had a way of escape, we would be arrested and put in jail and held there until we stood trial. And well, you know how it goes. So we've got to understand that the playing field is different now, so we need to address that. The same objectives that were had then, finding people that are inimical to the Constitution and dealing with them is one of the methods they used back then. Well, they were inimical to the cause of liberty or to the colonists back then, but today we're concerned with them being inimical to the Constitution. So if those are people are out there, we should, under British rule, have a right to deal with them the way we see fit, and I must assume then that that right has not been taken from us, since we're supposed to have more rights than we had then. To tear down buildings, well, steel and concrete, buildings with thousands of nails in them are a little harder to tear down than barehanded, so alternate methods of tearing down buildings can be applied, but we should have every right that existed back then available to us now, or even more so. Now, we've already mentioned the fact that the weaponry we have now is piss poor relative to what the government had, where back then it was equal. So the disadvantage, the playing field that we're working on, let's add cameras all over. Cameras everywhere. Some father got on a bus and threatened some kids the other day, and there was a camera in the school bus. So they showed that on television today. There are cameras everywhere, and we've got to deal with those cameras, too. There weren't spies everywhere. There was no way to track people the way there is now. It's always nice to have an extra license plate that you can slap on your car if you need to. However, the first element then, now understand the ground rules are different, so when things might seem a little out of hand, we're trying to look and see if we can emulate the activity of the founders. The first element is small units, small acts of aggravation. The directed activities intended to establish dissatisfaction among some of the citizens of the country. These actions might include targeted individuals and or businesses who have proven their disdain for the Constitution, violate the Constitution by their actions or activities, are supportive of those who violate the Constitution, or who have failed in their obligations to the people under contracts. Those are the tax collectors back then, the customs officers, the importers of tea. Understand that the authority of the sitting de facto, and we'll call it what it is, rebel government emanated from the Constitution. That Constitution, having been created by the people, is only capable of passing to the government authority that they themselves possess. Now, I wrote an article called Let's Talk About the Constitution, and it goes to a little more detail in the fact that if the government assumes authority from us, then we must have that authority unless it was denied us specifically, so we can assume that we have the same authority that the government does, unless they said we don't. Not in statute, but in the Constitution. Understanding, then, that if the rebel government has assumed that it has powers derived from that Constitution, though not enumerated therein, it has usurped authority that it assumes the people themselves have. I mean, it's logical. If they've taken it, they must assume that we had it to give. Given that the rebel government has assumed that they have the right to kidnap, torture, and assassinate, they have, by their actions, acknowledged that the people, too, have the authority, at least until constitutional government is restored. Absent the understanding that we must fight a foe with both as high a moral ground as possible, and that we must also assure that assumptions by the rebels do not preclude us from abiding by the same rules, we are totally within lawful authority to presume that we can abide by the same rules that the rebel government has dictated. This, however, only speaks to the state of nature that many have found themselves cast into. Committees of safety, militia, and judicial bodies are bound by a higher standard in their official capacity than those who speak for themselves. Consequently, the committees of safety, militia, and judicial bodies created under their authority shall not prosecute or impede those who have found themselves compelled to take individual action against the rebel government. Now, if you understand that, that means the committees of safety, the militia, and any judicial bodies created under them have an obligation to recognize that some people have been cast back into the state of nature, and they are taking the same course that the founding fathers did, and that the committees of safety, the militia, and the judicial bodies created under their authority shall not prosecute or impede those who have found themselves compelled to take individual action against the rebel government. There has to be a blind eye taken when people are on your side and doing the work for you that you can't do because in your official capacity it's not there. The Boston Tea Party was not sanctioned. The raids on custom houses and tearing down of houses and the tarring and feathering were not sanctioned. But believe me, the committees of safety and the militia never even considered prosecuting those that were involved in those quote-unquote crimes. Directed activities intended to establish a presence of dissatisfaction among some of the citizens of the country. These actions might include targeted individuals and or businesses which have proven their disdain for the Constitution. Boy, I must have duplicated that. Now, I also have another reference, and I'll get these URLs up there. It was a small book written by William Donovan in 1944. Donovan set up and operated the OSS, Office of Strategic Services, which eventually became the CIA. It's a little book on sabotage. It was kind of interesting. It was classified back then. It's not now. But some examples of these people that we're talking about. Law enforcement officers who have abused citizens without provocation. Insurance companies who have not fulfilled their obligation for losses sustained. And I think of the people as far back as the hurricane in Miami many years ago, 20 years ago, I guess. Some people have never been paid by their insurance companies under contract, and the government will not force the insurance companies to pay them. The same thing's occurring with Katrina. You put your money out, you expect the government to fulfill their obligation of contract to you, and the government then sustains them in not paying the claims that are filed against them. People in positions of public trust who have blatantly violated their oath of office. Boy, that's a long list. People in positions of public trust who have blatantly lied to the American public. Now, I think we mentioned last week that Roger Clemens is facing 30 years in prison for lying to Congress, but Congress is facing nothing but a good retirement plan and lifetime medical for them and their families for lying to the American public. When the government can do something that we can't, there's something seriously wrong with the system. So anybody in an office of public trust who blatantly lie to us is on the list. People who have proven themselves inimical to the Constitution. I'll post a link to Bad Guys, which lists a number of those people. And if you have any on the Bad Guys page, it has a way for you to submit names to be added to the list. Industry, which provides military-type equipment to law enforcement organizations or agencies. There's supposed to be a separation between the military and law enforcement. So any industry who's making a profit providing military, regardless of the fact that the government's asking for it, if they're willing to supply military-type equipment to law enforcement organizations or agencies, they're not on our side. They know the Constitution, they're ignoring it, and they're sustaining the government in creating a military out of the law enforcement agencies. Federal Reserve banks, we all know why they're on the list. Special interest groups inimical to the Constitution. Easily identified, how about ACORN and SEIU? So those are the potential targets when we look at the possibility of small acts of aggravation. Now, what's the role of the Committee of Safety? The committee will not be a part of this activity. It would be inappropriate for the committees to encourage activity that might be considered to be illegal. Committees, however, would provide protection for those who might be accused and threatened with arrest without a warrant issued by a grand jury. Now, remember, the Constitution requires that a grand jury issue an indictment. So if somebody's going to be arrested without an indictment by a grand jury, the committee properly can take the cause of that person. And that's in accordance with Article 5 of the Bill of Rights. Another role of the Committee of Safety would be enlistment of government employees or those in contact with government employees who can provide information regarding the activities, plans, and intentions of the rebel government should be pursued from the very beginning. Intelligence is invaluable. Now, we'll find an element in here frequently called public relations. Whenever any target of such activity is assaulted, the background of the individual or business shall provide some cause inimical to the constitutional government that can be emphasized to provide a remote justification. Such activity should not be attributed to random acts, if possible. Recognition of loss and sympathy cannot hurt as long as the disreputable aspects of the character of the target are also brought forward. Public relations operations shall endeavor constantly to establish an ever-enlarging network of correspondence, including other committee-related personnel, and to establish establishment press members who are not inimical to the Constitution. Militia duties. The militia operating in the capacity of militia will not be involved in this activity. Members of the militia not acting in the capacity of militia members of militia, members of security teams and individual cells would be the primary elements in this activity. They will be operating outside of the law and without authority. They should be protected as much as the members of the French resistance were during World War II. Every effort should be made so long as additional risk to the operation is not created to avoid loss of life to those not specifically targeted. Okay, that's the first step. So,
well, you know,
if you understand,
let me go over a couple questions with you here, then, because you know what I mean. I got to play devil's advocate with everything now. So, first off, what we're talking about here is a completely hypothetical situation. You know, for instance, let's say the government decides to one day just get up on TV and destroy our Constitution and say it doesn't exist. We're now a feudal state with a king, something like that, or whatever. Now, during this time, some of the things that you've mentioned, as you've said, they would not be legal to do. In fact, we would be violating the law by engaging in them, correct?
That would be
I'm sorry, you're breaking up there, Gary. Hang on, Gary. Gary, you're completely breaking up.
On the phone, what do you think?
You came in good there.
I don't know what's causing it, Ben.
You're good now.
The security teams and the leaderless resistance cells would be working, operating outside of the law, just like those people that tore down the customs houses, tarred and feathered people, and threw tea in the harbor. Yes, they would be working outside of the law.
Okay, now, according to with you, these would not be militia units that would be doing this, correct?
Not militia units. Now, members of the militia, when they're not on militia duty, I'm sure were quite often involved in such activity, but they are not operating in the capacity of a militia unit if they were to do this.
Now, you know, as you mentioned before, you know, this is some of these things are the very things that groups like the French Resistance and the French Underground, they were engaging in against the Germans, right?
They were engaged in that against the Germans and the Boche government, both their own government, the one that had acquiesced to the Germans and allowed the northern part of France to come under British rule with the French government, much of the existing French government still in place.
Okay. All right, so continue on. If I have questions, I'll pop in and play devil's advocate as we go along, whenever I get a natural break-in. And we'll go from there. So right off the bat, the militia and the committees of safety would not be involved in these. So they would be maintaining their lawful status.
They would maintain their lawful status, yes.
Okay.
They have no cause to take action at this point, except to protect their communities. Now, what I read you at the beginning, the right of self-defense. A cop can shoot you, you can't shoot a cop. But the right of self-defense is inherent. It has to be there. What good would life be without life? So the committees and the militia should be there to protect their community and those within the community that might be charged with a crime by finger-pointing by the police, as opposed to in accordance with Article 5 of the Bill of Rights.
Okay. Now, these are the exact actions also that our founding fathers engaged upon as well during this time, so, you know, let's keep that in mind as well. So, continue on, Gary. Sorry for interrupting.
Okay, well, let's chat a little bit more. I'm trying to get some links posted up there that I have mentioned. There's the necessity of understanding that the playing field is different. That's absolute. Without understanding that the playing field is different and that we have to adapt to this, what we've done is defeat ourselves before we've even begun, which is the whole concept behind this theoretical plan, that we have to have the means to achieve what the founding fathers achieved. They were, as far as we're concerned, totally within their rights. And if that's the case, then we must be totally within our rights to emulate them as best we can under the current circumstances. Now, the necessity of press that I mentioned is absolute. Now, the book that I mentioned, I've got to talk about this book. I've read a lot of books in the last 10 or 15 years. I've got 300 and some books in the bookshelf behind me. And of all those books, the only ones I enjoy more than this are the older history books written in the 1800s or some of the newer books that are bringing out information. For example, one of the first link I posted, the end of the Revolution, beginning of Independence, that gives us a little insight into what preceded April 19, 1775. But this book, Resistance to Tyranny. Now, I'd written this plan up long before I heard about this book. Now, I acquired a copy of this book, and I've got to say, with the exception of those historical books that I just mentioned, this is the best book I've read. This starts covers the whole spectrum of what's necessary to have resistance to tyranny. It goes from the little old lady with knitting needles who has very little to offer except maybe a room in her house to the guy in the front of an ambush with a bayonet on his rifle. It covers logistics, communication, code and cipher, ambush, assassination, everything. Every committee of safety and every militia in the country that believes in restoring the Constitution should have at least one copy of this book available, and it should be required reading for anybody who takes any position of responsibility within that committee of safety or within that militia. This book is unbelievable in its detail. As I was reading it, I would be in a chapter and I'd say, well, he hasn't covered that yet. He hasn't covered that yet. I'd go a few more pages. He hasn't covered that yet. I'd go a few more pages, and he covered it better than I could. I mean, this book is absolute detail on how things have to be achieved. One thing it doesn't talk about, or hasn't yet at least, it's kind of touched on it, but what we have to understand today is there are video cameras everywhere. A lot of them can be taken out with a red laser, at least temporarily. However, you have to be in front of the camera to use the red laser, so we're a
Hang on, Gary.
Bastard.
I've got a really good question from you from Delta Yankee in the chat room. Sorry for interrupting, but he says, Gary,
that's okay.
What you're advocating, hypothetically, let me stress that, hypothetically, is conducting operations against officials that don't follow their oath, collect taxes, or otherwise usurp our liberties. The COS would cover these activities through media, information on why these criminals were targeted, and militia support. No, I don't believe you're advocating militia support. If
well, the militia support is limited to protecting the community. If one of these rogue breaks is in your community, the government got to arrest them without indictment for granted is required by Article 5 of the Bill of Rights. Then you have a responsibility to that individual.
Gary, you're breaking up again really bad. We seem to be having Skype problems tonight. It might be better if you called in on a landline.
Let me call in so you get from 30 seconds.
And we have a caller in, so I'll bring the caller on now while you're coming on as well.
I won't be able to listen, so you'll have to repeat the question.
Okay. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Area code 562. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, just fine, thank you. And I find everything that he's talking about quite interesting. But there's one thing that we have to remember in all this before we get into all this hypothetical planning and whatnot, is that we started with a clean slate, okay? And
okay.
These politicians, yes, they are corrupt and horrible. However, we, the people, through are not participating in the government like we were afforded in the Constitution, allowed them to get the way that they are. So if the people, we the people, are not going to participate in the government, call our elected officials, give them a voice to take to Washington so that they don't just think, oh, well, they're not paying attention, so we'll just run our own agenda. Okay, then what's the point? People need to get involved on every level. It would never have gotten to the point it is right now had we done so. I mean, I look at the government like a new car. Okay, in the beginning, the new car runs great. It's fabulous. But there's routine maintenance that needs to be done. If you neglect to take the car in for the routine maintenance, what happens? It starts breaking down. And eventually it ceases to run. So we have to do the same thing with the government, and that is get on the horn and let them hear you. Let your voice be heard. Elections are very important, but that's not where it ends. And I think and not enough people actually, I mean, more people seem to be going to the polls. However, November isn't here yet. So who knows, actually? But it's more than just voting and responsibly voting. It's that routine maintenance in between. And I think that that is not emphasized enough. Everybody has an excuse why they don't call their congresspeople. Well, they don't listen to me. They this, they this. Okay, they that. Well, I called the other day, and at the very end of my phone call to the girl, I asked her, I said, so how many phone calls have you gotten today from, you know, people? And she said, well, about, no, I don't know, let me see here, 20-some-odd phone calls. I said, how many from constituents regarding the issues at hand? She said, oh, well, you're the second one. Now, that is completely unacceptable. This my congressperson has millions of constituents, and I was the second one that called. That phone should be ringing off the hook. You know what I mean? We can send emails, and that's great, but nothing quite works like ringing that phone and making someone pick it up and get giving them an earful, because emails sit in an email account till you look at them. You know, you don't, and it's not quite the same effect as if you call and all of a sudden they're telling their boss, hey, I need some help in here. The phones are really ringing. People are really upset, you know. So until people realize that they're not victims in all this, okay, that they have allowed this to happen, then, see, because there's no reason for all this apathy and whatnot, because just like we allowed it to happen, we have the answer, too. And that's get rolling up our sleeves up and getting involved.
Well, you're right, caller. And what is your name, by the way?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Drew, and I'm calling from Southern California.
That's my wife's name as well, Drusilla.
Oh, is it? Is she spelled it D-R-U-E?
Her name is actually Drusilla, but she goes by Drew.
Oh, great name.
But you brought up a good point, and if you're new to the show, I'm not sure if you've listened to our past shows before. What we're talking about now is a different progression now. The past shows we've talked about, we focus specifically on those items that you mentioned. In fact, the show that I do is primarily geared towards getting people to engage in that exact type of action. We promote a peaceful solution above and beyond anything. You know, none of us that listen to this show, and there's several militia commanders that listen to this show, and other people. I've got a gentleman running for governor who listens, a retired lieutenant colonel, and a military researcher. He listens to the show. We have not tried all peaceful means yet.
No, and not even the easiest one that we have, and the excuses are unacceptable, because there is no excuse. It takes 5 minutes to pick up the phone and let your opinion be heard, okay? 5 minutes, and we have time to screw around on the internet, but we don't have 5 minutes to do something that's important. And see, that's our responsibility. Freedom isn't free. And it's not cheap. And you have to stay involved, personally involved, keep up with the issues. Nothing is more important than that, because if you don't and you cannot make educated decisions, then you might as well just, you know, stay on the sidelines, because it's part of freedom. Our forefathers selflessly gave their lives for things that they didn't even have the opportunity to taste the fruits of their victory. They did it for us because that's how important it was to them, this concept of freedom and liberty. And we can't even pick up a telephone.
You make a great point there. It all comes down to personal responsibility. And unfortunately, we've let this problem go so long, and we've let our infrastructure that was always intended to control the government, the committees of safety and our militia, as well as an educated population, an active population, we let all that go. Those were the infrastructures that the Founding Fathers left behind for us, committees of safety, militia, and an active, responsible population of citizens. That's what they left us, and we let that go.
Yeah, so see, until we get that through our head that we are not victims, okay? They are not coming to us with guns to our heads yet and taking things from us. We are handing them over. We're allowing it to happen. So, see, I understand people being apathetic and whatnot, but they don't realize that they still have the power, that just like they gave it away, they can also take it back. But you have to get off your duff and you have to do something. I live 10 miles away from Bell, California, okay? I'm sure you've heard of them. They're in the news. They found out they were being screwed big time by their city managers and this and that with all these extravagant salaries they were getting. And guess what? They were getting taken by the people they put in office, okay, because they thought they were just dumb and weren't going to pay attention. And now those city officials are in jail, okay? They were arrested today. They're in jail. And those people have taken charge. They've gotten their hand, I mean, they rolled up their sleeves and they got involved and they're making things happen. And if the little city of Bell can do it, we have no excuse.
Oh, you're very true. Also, Gary Hunt is back with us now. Gary, welcome back. Sorry you're having problems.
I'm not sure what the problem was, but I couldn't even get to the Blog Talk page. I can see the chat, so my internet seems to be kind of screwed up right now. I've been listening to at least part of that conversation, and, you know, I'm going to point out that back in the after Waco from 93 to 95, the Pony Express of that time was the fax machine. And people were faxing actively. They'd wait until night and fax, and there must have been stacks of faxes in the morning when these politicians got to work, but never was there any positive response to the faxes. Phone calls were done, too. People were calling, making the phone calls back then, and nothing ever changed. How effective is that? A little town like Bell, when you've got a guy making $800,000 a year, well, that's, hell, you could get the government on your side. You definitely got the press on your side. But think back last year when a few hundred thousand people showed up in Washington. Now, that commitment to go from California to Washington and go out there with the crowds and say, we don't want health care, and the phone calls and the emails and everything that happened then, what did the government do? They passed it. They don't care about you. They're not going to respond to anything until the fear of God and the people is in them. And a phone call, a letter, going down to their office unarmed is not going to put the fear of God and the people in those politicians. I can assure you. I've been watching
There is strength in numbers, okay? And we really don't know how it would work until we've, like I said, in my representative's constituent base, there's over 3 million people. And in one day, okay, and I call constantly. My God, they know me when I say hello, okay? But two people, and I was the second one. That is unacceptable on any day of the week. I don't care what day. I don't care if nothing's going on. Those phones should be ringing off the hook every day.
Drew, is it possible that other people have made so many futile phone calls that they have given up on that tactic?
I don't really think so. Not in numbers. Not in the numbers there should be.
I know a lot of people that spent a lot of time on the phone back in the healthcare days, and it was futile. Absolutely.
Okay,
futile.
Well, if my representative represents millions of people, okay, then in fact, okay, I'm sure others do too, because they're all based on population, right? So millions need to get involved because this is affecting millions. Nobody has the luxury of not getting involved and sitting around and moping about it. You've got to get up and you have to try because you don't know until you have tried. And I'm not talking about two people on this block and another one over here. I'm talking about everybody because everybody enjoys their freedom, but they're not willing to do simple little things to keep it.
Well, you're right, Drew. And in fact, recently I had a guest on my show named Schaefer Cox. And the federal government was openly touting a plan to draw Schaefer into a bloody conflict. They were going to take his children for no reason, and they knew that he would not let them. The local military base commander offered him political amnesty on the base. Schaefer had a massive group of followers behind him with his various organizations, the Liberty Bell system, his local militia groups, and so forth. They got the government to stand down and start behaving there because of active participation, not violent participation,
right,
but active participation.
Exactly.
And that's what we promote here. We promote active participation. Violence is
Violence equates to ignorance, okay? And our forefathers, that was the last straw with them. I mean, they weren't just gun-toting. I mean, that was the last straw. And see, a lot of people like to talk about all this wild stuff, but those people generally haven't done the nonviolent trip, like the Beck rally in Washington, okay? They were expecting, they want to provoke this so that they can get you, and then they can say, see, look at these people, okay? But if you do it in the nonviolent way, what, they can't argue with that.
Well, exactly. But, you know, if we look back, you know, if we look back at Nazi Germany, yes, they, you know, the Weimar Republic was set up just like ours. It was a very republic country. People were free. They had a thriving, they had thriving culture. They had thriving sciences. Their education system was beyond belief. It rivaled ours if it didn't exceed ours. So at what point, though, when the people were trying to protest peacefully, at what point do they stop that, though? That is what we're trying to address here. At
right.
what point have you, at what point have you exhausted all peaceful remedies and solutions? And that's what we address on this show, as well as the basis of where our civil authority comes from, which is the committees of safety and our militia to back them up. See, that's what's been written out of our history books for over 100 years now, is the committees of safety, our branch of the government. So we're not promoting violence here. We're looking at the far end of that. And this show has been going on for a while now, so if this is your first one, I would recommend going back and listening to the other episodes in this series. We're on episode 5 now, as well as some of our other shows where we go into the committees of safety and their purposes and uses for that peaceful resolution.
Right. Well,
what we're doing here is we're over here looking at a book, though, that was recently written by a retired lieutenant colonel and a military researcher as well as a military professor. His name is Joseph P. Martino, and he wrote a book called Resistance to Tyranny. So we're actually putting this episode right here in line with what we were talking about, that was what his interview was with as well. So, but thank you for your call and everything.
Letting me vent and say hello to your wife for me and tell her I love her name.
Well, and listen, Drew, if you have any questions, you know, feel free to email me. If you'd like to discuss this further, by all means, feel free to email me, randymack@youhavetreadonme.com.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
I would love to hear from you.
Okay, thank you so much, and you have a good evening.
You too. You have a great one, and I'll keep you listening in and hope you enjoy the rest of the show. And please, by all means, hit me up as well.
Okay, I will. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, back in the 90s and even today, we face an interesting situation. Every year, some 6 million students graduate from high school. They have been indoctrinated by the school system and taught what government is all about, do as you're told, pay your bills, and go on with your life. Now, the Patriot community back then and from then through now is a long line, and at the beginning are people first becoming aware that something is going wrong. And at the other end is people that have watched the murders that occurred in Waco, Texas, in Ruby Ridge, Idaho, and in North Dakota with Gordon Call and California with Donald Scott, that the blood has been shed. So everybody in the Patriot community falls somewhere along this long, 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 long line. And it is difficult for some people to accept that efforts have been tried and have been futile. But to think that we should regress then and go back and let's try the phone call again, let's try the fax again, let's try the email again, when it failed so miserably last year, in the healthcare issue, when not phone, not fax, not email, but bodies moved to Washington, D.C., and all over the country, probably millions of people were in the streets. To think that we can have effect out of that, there's some people that are going to believe that is the only way that we can achieve what we're trying to achieve. I don't want to discourage them by a long shot, but I think that we also need to recognize the fact that there seems to be a high degree of futility in every effort that's been tried so far. In fact, if you caught the news today, it seems the Democrats are now going to try and rein in the Tea Parties and bring them in under their umbrella. So the Tea Parties are on their way out. They'll either be Republicans or Democrats or out. And now it's the ones that are out that have realized that the two-party system has failed us. So I appreciate what Drew said. I can appreciate where she is, but I don't know, to me, like Patrick Henry said, I have only one lamp to guide me, and that is the lamp of experience. And that lamp shines differently on my life than it does on hers. So anyway, back to the plan. Now, initially, this would be small units going out on their own with no guidance. And I hate to put it that way, but Lewis Beam wrote a very good article called Leaderless Resistance. It's the only secure method, and I wrote one on security teams, which, same thing, our security team wasn't as aggressive a unit as the as we planned and instituted it, although it had the potential, as Lewis Beam's Leaderless Resistance cells. But you have a small group of people, and you've got separation. If you enlarge it beyond that, the initial core, say you've got 5 or 8 people in the initial core, each of them can have people under him, but none of those people except maybe one should know any other people in the upper core. So that there is a separation, because infiltration is great in this country. Butler's Church in Idaho was estimated to have over 50% informants. That's the one that they tried to get Randy Weaver to become another informant upon. And the way they achieve power over informants is to charge them with a crime, give them a plea agreement, and the plea agreement, and I'll post a link right now, that explains it. A friend of mine received a plea agreement from the government. He didn't sign it. He gave me a copy of it. And basically, the government decides if what you have told them is true or not. And if it's not true, you got to go back and get truth. Eventually, it gets to the point that you will be willing to lie to stay out of prison because you've already given up some of your integrity by signing the plea agreement and agreeing to work for them in the first place. And that's the link I just posted. C3CM is the article. It's well worth reading. Oh, that's not the right one. No, that one is another one. That's the one I was talking to Randy about earlier. Informants Amongst Us is the one that I was thinking of. So I will post the link to Informants Amongst Us now. And it is the one that addresses the plea agreement and how it works. So these small groups are acting independently. They're making their own decisions. They're picking their targets, but they should consider. And if you read Joseph Martino's book, he talks about selection of targets and the precautions you should take, what intelligence you need to gather before you go after a target. He's very thorough in that. So, again, I recommend the book for everybody. They go out and get their targets. And, you know, in time, they're going to feel more and more comfortable with the people that are members of their team. They're going to feel comfortable if they don't have an informant in there. Or if they do feel uncomfortable with somebody, they hopefully will kick him out. So the next step, then, is units join together in small regions, like counties, greater acts of aggravation. As units acquire experience and others join the ranks, larger targets become viable and will produce, in many cases, more effective demonstrative of specific targets related to government enterprises, which are violations of the Constitution. So the results, as well as other objectives that were impractical with the smaller units. Now, think about this. If you're a cop and you've got this $80,000 a year salary, you've got retirement programs, you've got health, and you've got a great life insurance policy for your family should you be killed, and you've got a pretty easy job. You're armed, and if the other guy's armed, you get to shoot him, and if he's not armed, you can shoot him if you want to. You've got a good, strong position. Now, something that occurred to me a long time ago is what would happen if these guys that have this cush job all of a sudden found they were dying of instant case of lead poisoning in their cars. After a while, would the other cops start thinking, it's time for me to retire. I don't like the fact that I might not go home and see my wife and children this evening or after my shift. When you put the fear of God in the people and people that work for government, you can expect a lot of those people will begin to have second thoughts about the job they're doing. And again, resistance to tyranny addresses this very subject. They show that some assassinations are not effective, but others can be. If somebody had, he points out a lot of assassinations, they got worse rulers in some cases. You don't know what you're going to get, but he points out, too, that the lower levels might be more effective. Say, representatives and senators that definitely have not abided by their oath and are otherwise immune to prosecution for lying to us and lying when they got elected and lying when they got in office. So again, roles of the committee. Once again, the committee cannot participate in activities that might be considered illegal. They can, however, by means available to them, begin to promote a positive response to the activities that are occurring. Anticipating that the activities going on inside of the country might be precursors to other events, the committee should review the militia status, membership roles, commissioning of officers, and understand that they have a responsibility to assure the safety and integrity of the militia and its membership. Any suspicious activity by members of the militia or the committee should be investigated by a select committee with due consideration of government tactics of infiltration. And now that would be the link that I sent informants amongst us. They should also begin to consider defensive matters since they will be associated by some, as they already have been by the Department of Homeland Security and the MAIC brochure, with the activities going on about them. Special consideration should be made for those more active in the community who might be targeted by the government. Now that link is to C3CM, the first of the two links I just posted, most likely without cause, to provide for their safety, security, and means to remove them to a safe location should their seizure be imminent. So you've got leaders, and if somebody's outspoken and you're worried that he's going to get targeted by the government and probably without a warrant or an indictment from a grand jury, you need to consider, and Martino covers this too, you need to consider providing safety and security for that person and his family or her family, that if you need to move them to another part of the country that's more secure or less likely or to hide them from the government because they might get arrested just because they're outspoken, the militia, the committees of safety and the militia at this point begin playing a role in protecting people from unwarranted, unconstitutional government activity. All committee members actively working on or privy to measures being taken to provide for the necessary protection, as well as all militia members who have a working relationship with the committee, should be required to take both the oath of association and the oath of secrecy. These were modeled after what was used in Albany, New York, back during, in 1775, 1776, and throughout the duration of the war. And I've told this story before, but I guess we've got some new people here, so I'll tell it again. I was called to testify in 1997 at the Florida Common Law Court trial of, I don't remember how many defendants. I was subpoenaed by one of the defendants, Toby Brown. And so I went out to testify on his behalf. We had started a committee of safety in Central Florida, Central Florida Committee of Safety, and the people that subscribed to the committee filled out the subscription form, and it said name, and you wrote your name down. And after that, it says, is this your real name, yes or no? If you answered no, we didn't ask what your real name was. We just wanted to know if that was your real name or not. And then further down, it says if you're a member of law enforcement, court, or a bank, an attorney or a banker, that you cannot join the committee of safety. If you're not one of these, then sign and you can join the committee. Well, there was an undercover IRS agent named Robert Quigley. He went by the name of Robert Chapman, which is how he signed in. So when I testified that he had signed the subscription form saying that that was his name and he was not a member of law enforcement. Now, you never know why a jury makes the decision it does unless you've got some way of speaking to the jurors and getting them to answer the question. But of all the people indicted and tried in the Florida common law court trial, the only one that wasn't convicted was Toby Brown, and the primary witness against him was Robert Quigley, and with the oath that he had taken, that he was swearing that this was true, he had said that his name was Robert Chapman and he was not a member of law enforcement. How much weight that had, Toby and I both felt that it had a lot of weight because it told the jury, this guy is willing to lie. Now, there were some other things that indicated that he'd lied as well. But Toby was the only one to beat the case. The rest were convicted and sent to prison. So the oath of association and the oath of secrecy, if they're taken sworn by the people that take them, may have merit in a court. Now, you'll see referenced in the oath of secrecy to a court of justice. Not a court of law, but a court of justice. Did you ever think about the difference between the two? Well, they didn't even consider a court of law. They only considered a court of justice. So if you can show that the person was willing to lie, that might cause any juror to have question about the credibility of the testimony that he might give because he's proven that he can lie already. So it can be a means of discrediting people. Understanding without regard to statute, now when they take the oath, they should understand that they're taking it without regard to statutory law. These oaths are sacred, and the consequence of violation of the oath will not be taken lightly, and that should be impressed upon people. If you lie on this oath, we will not take it lightly. Public relations should continue as before. Every effort should be made to direct any anger at the events to the cause of the problem, not at those who dealt with the problem. Hopefully, there will be some degree of coordination between the public relations people and the units that were conducting activities so that the public relations people will be privy to the information that resulted in targeting the individual or building and would have some time to further supplement the grievances against the target. So the sooner the people in public relations are aware of a potential target without jeopardizing the safety of the action, the more opportunity the public relations people have to do additional research that might assist in coming up with even more information explaining the bad deeds of the person that had been targeted or the building or the company that had been targeted. Militia duties. Once again, the militia duties would be limited to operations that were to protect against government abuse of authority or violations of the Constitution. They might also begin to consider that something is happening that will lead to even more activity and begin to prepare and train for what they might anticipate to be required of them. Okay, so at this point, the individual cells who have operated and functioned well and feel secure within the cells can begin communicating with other cells, creating, if you've got 5 to 8 people in a unit and you can get 2 or 3 units together, 16 to 24 people, say, that you can pick, you provide better security and pick the larger targets, more effective targets, and go out and go after those targets. The necessity of expanding the operation to begin to incorporate larger entities is obvious, and it will continue to grow as time goes on during the course of this plan. I lost my internet completely now. So
yeah, I did go offline. So it seems like you're having problems on that side. Do you mind if I jump in with a few questions here real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. Now, some of the things that you're talking about here with the security teams and so forth, you know, targets, such as, you know, you've mentioned that, you know, some of the targets that these groups, you know, would most likely go after to, you know, cause some kind of aggravation upon them. What about the public perception? What about, you know, public support there? You know, you've mentioned that the committees of safety need to take these events and address them with the population, you know, with the population of their society, their citizens, and explain to them what's going on. You know, not condone it, but by no means condemn it either, but explain why it's happening, as well as use it with the government to say, look, you can either deal with us, reasonable people, or you can deal with them, and, you know, stuff like this is going to keep happening, so maybe we should sit down and talk. Is that basically what you're trying to, you know, come across as the whole agenda there? You know, if a country, you know, like we were talking about, like in Resistance to Tyranny, where Joe Martino was talking about Russia during, you know, during the Bolshevik Revolution and just afterwards, where, you know, tens of millions of people were disappearing and being killed.
Well, that potential probably exists here for the same thing to happen. When I was in Waco, the reporters, I met an Australian, a French, and an English reporters that were going out looking for stories. The American reporters were going to the press conferences, getting the government pablum feed, going back, writing their stories, sending them out. An opportunity arose at one point when one lady got curious when we were up in the courthouse getting some paperwork filed, and there was a little confrontation with the FBI, and the reporter was not allowed into the clerk's office, and then after we came out, she asked what was happening, and she was willing then to listen to us, and I realized something then, that maybe they're not willing to go out and look for a story, but maybe they're willing, if you talk to them and explain something, to realize that there is another side of the story. And as it turned out, on other occasions during the course of Waco, like I knew that $1,500 had been sent out to pay for the ice cream and milk that was sent in to the children. The FBI took credit for being nice guys. So this is after I was kicked out of the press conferences. The reporter went in and said, what happened to the $1,500 that David Koresh sent out? And Bob Rex said, $1,500? What $1,500? Well, I understand that $1,500 was sent out to pay for the milk and ice cream that you sent into the kids. Oh, I don't know anything about that. I'll have to look into it. So the next day he comes back and says, oh, that money was turned over to the state attorney's office as evidence. Trying to belittle the fact that David didn't want anything for free. He didn't want milk for the children for free. He was willing to pay more than market price for it. But the reporter then wrote a story on that. So they're receptive to things if they're given the opportunity to think outside of the box the government creates for them. Some more so than others. Others didn't really give a damn. So it's looking at those reporters that are willing to listen openly and say, here's the whole story, that there's potential for things to happen. Now, as far as the gulags, if the government started massive sweeps of people in this country, I think that the reaction would be a lot different than it was in Russia, because we are armed here, and remember, they were disarmed then. When people are disarmed, they're easily taken. But even the people that might not agree with what's happening, if this scenario plays out somewhere along the line, if they start seeing massive sweeps of people, you know, 30% of a community picked up and carted off somewhere, they're going to get upset too, presumably. I don't know. I can't answer for them. They might think that phone calls to the senator's office might have an effect. But I think that you can start to see that if something drastic is happening, there's going to be a little more curiosity as to what it really is happening and why it's happening. The five W's are reporting who, what, why, when, where. What and why become very significant when there are two sides to a story. So does that answer your question there, Andy? I can't see the...
No, it very much answers it. You know, you brought something that you had mentioned earlier, and I'd like to reference Joe's book here if I could, you know, because like I said, I just got my copy of the book today.
Everybody have a copy of the book.
Every committee of safety that establishes and every militia unit out there should have copies of this book, multiple copies to pass around if possible. But, you know, he brings up a good point here. If during the mass arrests, now he's talking about the situation in Russia, in the Soviet Union. And there was a quote by a gentleman named Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and he said, how we burned in the prison camps later thinking, what would things have been like if every Soviet police operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive? If during periods of mass arrest, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door and every step on the staircase, but had understood they had nothing to lose and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, or whatever else they had at hand, the organs would very quickly have suffered a shortage of officers, and notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, the cursed communist government machine would have ground to a halt.
So he's pointing out that earlier is better than later, because later is too late.
Correct.
Now, remember the second quote I read at the beginning. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for the one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join you in resisting somehow. In between come all the hundreds of little steps, some of them imperceptible, each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next. And one day, too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible of them, all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy. And that says the same thing that Solzhenitsyn said, that the longer you wait, Patrick Henry said it too, but the longer you wait, the greater the chances of dismal failure of what you might pursue. And in our case, it's restoration of the Constitution. In Germany, it was resistance to the expanding imposition on races and religions within Germany and later within most of Europe. In Russia, it was anybody, the intellects, and China, the intellects, anybody that posed a threat to the Communist Party.
Well, you know, let's look at during the Bolshevik Revolution, they used the intellectuals and the academia to bring in socialism. And then when socialism came in, you know, during the academics and the intellectuals realized they had been lied to and deceived, and what they thought they were bringing in is not what socialism was. So they had to be gotten rid of, and they were all killed off in mass droves. They always kill, those tyrannical systems always get rid of the people they use to bring it in.
Yes, and they're the ones that are teaching in our universities today, believing that it'll be different this time. But then I don't care about them, because they're warping the minds of people. They're the ones that cause the high school students and the college students to come out believing that the government has absolute authority. So anyway, going on. Connections created between county elements, offensive and defensive operations. By this time, there will be a clear... Now, the time frame for this is dependent upon the amount of activity. The greater the activity, the greater the partition, the more rapid the time frame will carry through the various stages. They won't necessarily come in the order that I'm talking about. Some places will be ahead of others. So this is just a general scenario, but as I said at the beginning, it's theoretical, and it's very possible that this sequence of events would allow a revolution to occur in this country if the time came that it was necessary. So by this time, there will be a clear indication that the occurrences of the recent past are not random, nor are they temporary and limited. It will be apparent to most of those who are not tied to their daily regime that there is something afoot. Now, this will be all over the areas where there's activity, at least, perhaps not all over the country. However, the way the news goes, you will know that Paris Hilton got arrested or something like that, and you might find out that something's happening in other parts of the country. Forces will have begun gathering on both sides, and it's time to consider that activities will, of necessity, become more open and notorious. Logical conclusions will begin to direct the rebels, those in rebellion against the Constitution, forces will begin to assert their presumed authority to groups of individuals who they suspect of any involvement in the ongoing activities. Now, this is where it starts to become a threat to the committees of safety and the militia. As operations become larger and more frequent, there will be efforts to create open confrontation, which might be avoided, however, must be prepared for. Consideration of just who might be an enemy or a rebel, whether the protection of the community warrants, and what might be done to prevent participation of certain people should be included in operational plans. Role of the committee. Committees need to continue to expand their defensive measures and direct the militia to perform as necessary any defensive actions. They might also begin evaluating certain rebel government agencies which are acting inconsistent with the Constitution and anticipate emulating the activities that might be necessary, public protection, judicial, and public safety, in the event or failure in the existing system, and preparing to take over those responsibilities for the community should the need arise. Now, the first link that I posted, the end of the revolution and beginning of independence, that's exactly what occurred the year prior to Lexington and Concord, that the local committees, town meetings, by whatever name they called themselves at the time, they forced judges to resign at gunpoint. Tens of thousands of men under arms would go to the courthouse and demand the resignations. At least one of them immediately set up its own judiciary to deal with criminal but not with civil matters. And for the most part, civil matters, any lawsuits over contracts, any more foreclosures or anything like that, was held off until the end of the revolution. So only the criminal matters would go before the courts. But they set up their judiciary. They provided for the public safety. They made sure that all the duties were taken care of, and they disregarded the royal government in making sure that their community was taken care of. Now, what does this mean in terms of how we operate today? Well, your county's got a public works department. Your city's got a public works department. Your county's probably got a public utilities. The city's got public utilities. And there are private public utilities providing electricity, gas, water, things like that. You need to start thinking that the need for water and electricity and telephone and these things for the public safety need to be protected and kept open. Now, if that means going down to the water and sewer department and informing them that the militia or the committee of safety has advised the militia that the flow of water and sewage will continue and say a subtle implied threat that you will do your job, and to go to the phone company and say you will keep the phone lines open, and to go to the public works people and tell them that you will keep the roads and the bridges open for transportation. You're doing your job as a committee of safety to make sure that we've got the ability to have the utilities and services that we expect from a collective. Back then, the collective quite often was the town meeting or the committee of safety. They repaired the roads. If somebody didn't do it individually, they repaired the roads and the bridges, and they didn't have running water and a lot of the niceties we have now, but now we're used to them and we need them, and they need to be protected. So the role of the committee now begins to assume the responsibility for the community. If any apparently,
oh, you know what? I've got
you
brought up a great
service occurs, then the committee needs to step in. What?
You know, you brought up a great point there with the, you know, vital infrastructure and necessary services. You know, if we look at California right now, California has just posted several new crimes that several crimes that the police will not be responding to because there's no manpower. But there's manpower to give tickets still, and there's manpower to engage in, you know, extortion from the people for money, enforced extortion, you know, for victimless crimes, speeding tickets, parking tickets, things like that. They still have room for that. So, you know, the committees are going to be vital in this aspect as well in trying to help keep the peace amongst the society, and, you know, the militia would be a great resort there as well to help secure our communities against, you know, these predators that are going to be coming amongst us soon if all of our vital services are getting cut back more and more while our taxes are going up and up.
That's right. Now, the only agency that we're used to seeing that I've not mentioned is what they now call public safety, which is law enforcement and fire department. The fire department needs to be treated as all the other utilities. Wouldn't hurt for the committees to advise the police department that they've got to decide which side they are on. It's possible that at this point in time, seeing the writing on the wall, the entire police department, or at least most of them, might decide that, hey, I'm going to put red, white, and blue ribbon on my left shoulder, which is what Jack McClam recommended in Vampire Killer 2000, to show that they're on our side. Because if shooting starts between the police and the militia, unless you know which one's not to shoot at, you're going to shoot at everyone that's got a uniform and a gun. Now, if the guy's got a red, white, and blue ribbon on his shoulder and you see he's shooting up in the air or not shooting at all, then you don't shoot him. But if he's not doing those things, then you would have to shoot him in your own self-defense. So, but now the role of the committee now is all of a sudden expanded into one of responsibility because there's a conflict between two government entities, the one that is the royal government or the rebel government, and its influence over these local governments, which happened in all the town meetings, and the committees of safety who are concerned with protection and safety of their community at this point in time. And that has to be dealt with, and it's best to be dealt with by the committee of safety, not the militia. The members of the committee go up and talk to each of these entities and say, look, you can see the writing on the wall. Something's happening, and it's big. Here's what we know about it. Now you decide which side you're on. If you're going to serve, try and arrest people without an indictment by a grand jury, then you're taking the wrong side. Read your Constitution, Article 5, Bill of Rights. And don't read what the government, Department of Justice, has told you it means. Read what it says. Now, in coordination with other committees, a study of the region in which they are situated to determine what facilities need to be maintained, operational, and operational should be conducted. So if you've got other committees around you, 20, 50, 100 miles away, but you're sharing utilities like power, and if somebody's got a dam or some generating system in their area, you might want to assist them to make sure that it keeps generating electricity. Electricity is important for everybody. Especially nowadays with medical care, what it is. If somebody was relying on something in the hospital and the hospital didn't have an emergency backup system or if it broke down, not having electricity flowing would put that person's life at risk. You can imagine how disastrous it would be. Food would spoil everything. So the committees need to reach out to the other committees and say, look, between us, are there some elements that we've got to concentrate on to make sure that these public services and public utilities remain operational for the good of our communities? So at this point, you've expanded out, and I've listed some of them. Hospitals should be informed that they will provide medical services to anybody that comes in injured, and if it's a gunshot wound, that no report will be made to anybody because of the doctor-client relations, regardless of what the government said. Communications facilities have to be maintained open for the health and safety of everybody, and especially for communication even though you've got to understand that open communication on phone lines is not the safest way to communicate valuable information. Public utilities, public transportation, buses, trains, even airplanes should be flying in case people need to go somewhere else. Production of food and other necessities. If food is grown in your area, or if it's transshipped through your area, or more than likely, if you're in any even fairly large population area, there will be food warehouses. It might be Safeways, it might be Independence, but there will be food warehouses, stocked full of food. I worked in one many, many years ago in a little town called Dubois, Pennsylvania. That food needs to keep flowing. Your obligation as the Committee of Safety is to make sure that if there's food available, people have it to eat. It doesn't do any good in the warehouse. Commercial transportation of necessary products. So if there's warehouses are distributing food, that transportation of that food cannot just go to government, to police departments, to the National Guard, to the Army, to the federal office. It has to go to the people. In fact, if anybody's cut out of the loop, it should be the federal government and anybody who sides with the rebel government, which leaves more food available for the people. Because I don't know, I have this sense in me that the people are more important than the government. I've had it for most of my life, and I just can't get it out of my system. And then emergency operations centers. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with an emergency operations center. Back in the 70s and 80s, a lot of federal dollars went out to local sheriffs, a lot of police stations. And what they did is they built semi-underground bunkers, self-sustaining, extensive communication systems. They were strongholds where these people could hunker down and last for months. They had food supplies, water stored, and everything. They're called emergency operations centers usually. Most sheriff's departments have a relatively large one. I've been in five or six of them because as a surveyor, I was involved in the construction of some in Florida, and they are extensive. They're built more solidly than a bank vault. If you've got friendly law enforcement people, then that operations center becomes yours and theirs, and you share it for communications and everything else. If it's not, sequester it, encircle it. Lay siege on it. Get bulldozers and push dirt on it if you have to. But you don't want them, the enemy operations center, to exist in your community. Now, maybe we're not quite to that point yet, but you need to know where the emergency operations centers are until the decision's made that, look, they've taken the side of the rebel government and they're going out trying to arrest people all the time, so we got to do something.
Gary. We actually are down to our last 2 minutes, so we're going to be cutting off here anyways in a minute, so why don't we cut it off there?
We'll cut it off right there.
And I would like to remind everybody, I'd like to let everybody know, here in the next couple of days, I'll be having information on resistance to tyranny all over the website in our forums, and I'll be posting it all over the other forums that I belong to as well. You'll have information there, ordering information, how to get a hold of it. And I'm going to try to work with for a discounted price from the author himself. So we will see what we can do there. But I will get the information up for everybody here shortly. Again, this book, I believe, should be in the hands of every committee of safety out there as well as every militia unit. I would recommend it being read, passed around, do whatever it takes to do. If you have to get five people to go in on it together, you get five people and you... That being said, next show we have coming up is going to be Survival Sunday. We're going to have Smiter from the Silent Sons of Washington on, and he's going to be talking to us about one of his many skills and talents out there, which is alternative energy, especially portable and emergency survival energy. He's going to be posting a lot of links, so you're going to want to be in the chat room for that. Militia Monday, we are going to have Joe Martino back on, and after that will come the next episode of Time for a Plan as well.
On Saturday, aren't we, doing Committee of Safety for those interested?
Yes. Sorry, also this Saturday, Committee of Safety conference call in the chat room, youhavetreadonme.com. Committee of Safety meeting Saturday, youhavetreadonme.com. Show Up There is going to be interactive. We want and we really need your questions so we can see exactly where you guys are needing more information at and get those and get your questions answered. So pop in. That'll be same time as always, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. That'll be posted on the website as well as Blog Talk and several other sites. And with that being said, Gary, if you need more info on the committees, www.committee.org, www.committee.org. More info than you can read in a day there. Go check it out. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you later. Bye-bye.